Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 15 of the Think Orange podcast. My name is Ashley Bohens, and my fabulous co-host is not with us today. So I will be trying to do this without him. He is in Israel because he, you know, travels the world, and I'm sure he's taking some amazing pictures. He'll be posting. Follow him on social media. He has the best posts and the best pictures. Today we'll be hearing from Tom and Elisa Parsons, who will share their experience with their son who has special needs and how it acted as the catalyst to them volunteering at their church. And then we'll get a chance to talk with Megan Wall, pastoral leader of special needs at Stonebriar Community Church in Frisco, Texas. I'm so excited for you to hear this interview. And our goal today is to start a conversation at your church with your team about an area of ministry that's often overlooked or under-resourced. These, my friends, are the kinds of things we'll talk about every year at Orange Tour. Speaking of, Orange Tour is the sponsor of today's podcast, and I want to personally give everybody a shout out and a personal invitation to Orange Tour. I want to meet you. I want to see your face. I want to hear your story. We're going to be talking about being for our neighbor, and what better topic to start that conversation off than to talk about how you can be for the families in your community who are raising sons and daughters with special needs. So we'll be in 20 cities. You can log on to orangetour.org and find out which city is nearest to you. So let's dive in and hear from Tom and Elisa Parsons.
I have to share really connects, and that people can take some good information back to their ministries and make a difference in your kingdom. Bless our time and our cough. In Jesus' name, amen. Yes, forgive us for a couple coughs here and there. We're hopefully going to get the mic turned down a little bit if we we get out of control. Okay, so there's a lot of people in here. I hope we have enough time for it. I want to hear your favorite Bible verse. Okay, so we're going to go down the rows one at a time.
Wait, I'm not sure we have time for that.
Okay. Well, we don't have time for everyone to do it one at a time, I'm going to ask you to do it all at one time. I'll listen. So think of your favorite Bible verse, and when I say three, one, two, three, you know, you're just going to say it as loud as you can, especially in the back, so I can hear you, because I want to listen to all of them, okay? You ready? One, two, three. Keep going. There you go. I'm getting it.
And the word was with God.
Okay, thank you. That was a lot of truth, but also very chaotic. That's every day in the life of our 13-year-old son, Dane. At the time of his diagnosis, at three and a half...
He's number four, by the way.
He's there in the middle. Everyone else is smiling, and he's confused. We were in a church that did not minister to us in any way. And through the things that we're going to talk about this morning, you're going to find out, I think part of the reason why we're involved in this is because we have had two very diametrically opposed experiences in church. And unlike many couples and families, we stuck it out.
You know, as a parent, we feel what our child feels. So when I would take Dane to a situation like a wedding or church in that time in our lives, and he would have this experience, of course, what we want to do is protect our child. And so as parents, we think, well, we're just not going to go. We just won't go to church. Well, as you know, the devil loves that. He just absolutely loves that we were pushed away from something that should have been healing for us. So I'll give you a for instance of something that happened. Right around the time of his diagnosis, I knew something was wrong. We couldn't really pinpoint what it was. And I went to the nursery worker and I said, you know, if he has a problem during class, would you just come and get me? We were just going into that really where he had stopped talking and he was, you know, throwing tantrums and he wouldn't respond to his name and he was eating things that were not food. And, you know, you guys are familiar with a lot of these things. And so I looked at her and I said, you know, Dixie, would you please come get me if there's a problem? Well, nobody came and got me during the service. So I'm thinking, awesome, you know, I'm going to pick him up and I'm really excited. And I walk in and my child is sitting in the timeout chair and he's just crying and crying and crying. And I said, well, what happened? And she said, well, he was turning the lights on and off over and over and over. And I'm like, well, duh. I mean, I told you he was going to have a problem and you didn't come get me. And instead of coming and getting me and let me deal with it, because I'm the trained person, she dealt with it in a way that really was damaging to him, because all he associated with church at that point was, I'm going to get in trouble, I have to sit in the timeout chair. And all he was doing was what was natural to him and stimulating his brain and turning the light on and off. Yes, it was annoying to the other people in the room, but that's why I asked her to come get me. So through that experience, we started to go, well, maybe this isn't the place for us. But I didn't know anybody who had autism. I didn't have a support group. My church didn't have anything for me. There was nothing, not another place I could take Dane. So we just kind of had to deal with what we had. So through our trying to figure out what was going on with him, we learned that he responds to drawing into building. He's a very visual child. So one of the things that we appreciate when we have a caregiver now is if they can connect with him on a level that he can learn from. So not every child is going to be the same. I mean, those of you who have children know, I have twins and they're vastly different. But even in your special needs ministry, they're going to learn in different ways. Some are visual, some like story time, some don't. Some can sit still, some can't. So we figured out that through school that Dane would communicate through drawing. And through building, and he would start to let us know how he felt. Here's a picture. He went through he's still kind of in it, a Minecraft phase. And this is our family. These are his two sisters, and that's him in the middle holding the sword, which I don't know why. And his brother has a bomb. I don't know why that is either. But that became his safe place, our family, because that's all we had. We couldn't go to church and hang out, so his family became his safe place. What if church was his safe place? What if he had been able to feel that way about going to church and having a caregiver at church who really connected with him in a way that he learned? So that brings me to the next point. Thank you for
sure.
I really think that we need to learn as a church body how to lead with grace. And that means that you have to drop all assumptions or opinions when that kid walks in the door or rolls in the door in their wheelchair or mom and dad carry them in screaming and crying because they don't want to be there. You need to lead with grace. One of the things you can do is seek to understand their situation. You can ask positive questions. When mom and dad come in there, they want to know that you are trying very hard to learn who their child is. They are terrified to leave them there with you, this person they don't know, who's not been trained by them, who might put their kid in timeout for an hour because they flipped a switch on, light switch on and off. So it's important to ask positive questions. What does your child like? Usually, I know with us, when that question is asked, the things that he cannot do come out in conversation without them having to ask me a negative question. So if I say, you know, he really loves to go outside and run around, but he can't, blah, 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 blah. That way, you're still staying on that positive side, and the parent feels like you're really genuinely interested in what's going on. If you were to say, so what kind of things should we watch out for? What are they going to think? They're going to think, this woman is already, or this man, is setting me up, just putting their defenses up and getting ready because they feel like they're about to go to battle. And that's not what this is about. This is about loving them and accepting them just the way they are. Another thing is, remove all negative talk. Okay. So this same situation that I was talking about before with the timeout situation. I would come to pick up my child from the nursery. And the nursery worker, she was very well-meaning, but she would come to me and she'd say, you know, I really think I know what Dane's problem is. He really needs to be in daycare. And so to me, what that said to me was, you're a really bad mom. You don't have enough social interaction for him. This must be your fault that he's this way. Or just general information that really wasn't their place to give me or advice. Or when I'd come and pick him up, they'd be like, he was really bad today. Well, you know what? That's every day for me. That's the last thing I need to hear when I come to church. I need to be able to come to church and for that caregiver to say, you know what? We had the best time today. Here's something great that he did. I cannot wait to see him next week. So-and-so loved to play with him. One really cool story that I have about this is when we first came to our current church where we're so supported, we have a great special needs ministry. We had been for years in a church that was not that way. So when we went to church, you know, I'd drop Dane off and I'd kind of be like, hurry, should we run? You know, are they going to catch us and say, no, you have to come back? Week after week, I would sit and I would look at the number counter and just waiting for my number to come up. You know, like he pulled somebody's hair or he took his clothes off or, you know, whatever he's going to do. And it never showed up. And so one day I wrote an email to our director and I said, I just wanted you to know, I keep waiting for you to tell me that he can't be in here, because that was our experience before. I'm sorry, we don't have a place for him, so good luck. You know, I was expecting that to happen. And an amazing thing happened. She sent me an email back and she said, Elisa, I am not going to call you unless he's bleeding. She said, he will always be accepted here. And that was the first time where I was able to just sit down in my seat in church and just accept what the Holy Spirit had for me, because I was able to relax. I was able to just have faith that these people loved him no matter what he did, which is what Christ has done for us. And what a beautiful picture of what that's like. Another thing that you can do is make it a goal for your volunteers to become friends with their buddy, with their little kiddo that they hang out with outside of church, because that's what this is about. This conference is about, okay, what do we do on Monday? Okay, Sunday's great, but how can we pull this into Monday? Dane has a really cool high school volunteer who hangs around with him. His name's Ethan. And Ethan is so patient. Ethan is a teenage guy, so you wouldn't really expect him to be quite so patient. So patient, loves what he does. Dane looks forward to seeing him. One week, Dane came home from church and he had this package in his hand. Well, Dane loves Skylanders. Like, he thinks that's the coolest thing ever. He doesn't play the game so much as he just collects the figurines, which is crazy, but...
And expensive.
Came home with this package in his hand. And I thought, uh-oh, did he steal it? I didn't know. Where did it come from? And he got in the car and I said, where'd you get that? And he goes, Ethan bought me a Skylander. It was the one that I really, really wanted and you wouldn't buy me. So I thought, how cool for this volunteer to learn what Dane liked outside of church. And then every time Dane looks at that, he's going to think, that's Ethan from church and he loves me. What's he going to want to do on Sunday? He's going to be like running. I'll be like, Dane, wait, I got to check you in. You know, he's going to be running to his class period. So I thought that was such a great example of how you carry what you learn on Sunday about this child into the rest of the week. You want reminders for them. And as a parent, oh my goodness, it puts you at such ease to know, these people know my kid. And it makes us want to come back. It makes us want to be part of the ministry. It makes us want to volunteer.
There are some things that you can do. Again, going back to the little or no budget type of thing, that apply the exact same way in special needs that they do in other ministries of the church. What happens when you have a shut-in, or someone who gets injured and is in the hospital for a few days, or a family has a new baby, or there's some other extenuating circumstance? What do people do? They develop a prayer chain. They take meals to people. They do all sorts of stuff. You know, some of these parents, they're having therapy once a month, once a week, sometimes once a day, and they don't get really any, you know, feet on the street living like that, where somebody is looking out for them, sending them meals or things like that. One of the things that our church did here in the last few years, actually early on in our time there, the volunteers or the staff scheduled a coffee with Elisa to learn about her story, not just Dane's story, but her story, our other kids. We'll get to talk about them a little bit more later, but yes, we do have other kids, and they also have unique perspectives and needs in life. But the fact that the ministry took time to learn us as a family was special to us. A few practical pointers, though, on how to see past the special need. One of the things that our church did differently is when we showed up to the special needs suite, early on we were recognized, but after a few weeks, it was inconsequential whether or not we were there. It was all about Dane. And so when we noticed that they were taking special interest in Dane, it made it easier for us to understand that he had his own identity here and that it's not through us. In many places, the tendency will be to ignore that child because they can't communicate back to you probably anyway, or since I don't know exactly what their need is or what their hang-ups are, I better not engage them.
Or I'm a little bit afraid.
Yeah. Or I might offend the parent. Don't worry about it. The fact that the parent sees you trying to connect with that child takes the heart rate from combat level to just a little bit of heightened sense of awareness. And that's, trust me, a very wide gap. So it became very awesome to us to go into the special needs suite and to have people just, you know, especially the ones he gets used to seeing, they have people all about Dane, talking to Dane, how was your week, buddy, things like that. And then I guess to this point, you know, we might get a nod like, yeah, we got it from here or something like that. But many times we have to engage the volunteers or in the staff who are checking them in to make sure they know, hey, we're here too, you know. but that really made a difference.
I want to add here, that's kind of a beautiful spot to be in because your child is getting ownership and they're getting their own identity. And for a lot of us, that's kind of a dream we let go when we find out we have a diagnosis. You know, it's kind of like they're just always going to be, you know, with you. So it's great to see someone acknowledge them as a whole person.
Along the lines of paying special attention to that special needs person, our church does an amazing job of ministering to that person as though they have a soul, because they do. And maybe they don't communicate it back. I mean, have you seen the videos? You've seen them all on YouTube where somebody who wasn't verbal for like 20 years gets an iPad and starts speaking like at a college level through it. And they're like, you know, just younger age where they didn't have a traditional education and somehow they're able to speak. It starts changing how you talk around them too. But if you think of it as pouring into a person, just because they can't pour back doesn't mean you don't pour into them. And if they never really share back with you what they've learned, I mean, because that's what teaching and learning is all about, right? You teach someone something and you get them to either say it back to you because they've memorized a verse or something, or you see them practically living out their faith in some way if they've come to Christ. Well, with many special needs people, that feedback mechanism isn't there. Without some special ways of getting to it and obviously a lot of God working through it to minister back to you in other ways. But the fact that we have people investing in our child because, like we said at the beginning, he communicates through his art when he can't get the words out, or even though he has the words, they don't make a whole lot of sense. So we can start looking at some of the art. And here's a good example of one. This was several years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
I was actually cleaning out his school bag.
Yeah.
This was not on a Sunday. This is during the week. Do you want me to share this?
Yeah, please, okay. Please. You were there for it.
I love to talk over him, sorry. okay, so Dane and I had a few conversations about what he had learned at church, but you know, you never fully know if they're grasping what's going on until they communicate you in the way that works with them. And like I said before, for Dane, it was in drawing or building. So he came in and said, hey, buddy, what's this? And he said, oh, you know, that's the Cloud Man. That's the Cloud Man. It's like, okay, the Cloud Man. And I said, well, can you tell me what's going on? And he goes, well, Mom, look, there's a cross. It's like God, you know, he's like holding the whole world. And I thought, oh my goodness, he gets it. He gets what he learned on Sunday. And during the week, I'm able to see this manifest. What an encouragement to me as a parent that I made the right choice to take my child and leave them with these people that I don't know really well yet. I do now, but at the time I didn't.
Right.
And it was so cool to see God increase my faith in that way through this kiddo who sometimes we have no idea what he's talking about. And it's very important, and we love it, but we don't know what he's talking about.
And sometimes he's off in his theology. Okay, let's just...
Should we tell him about Hulk Jesus?
Hulk Jesus.
Okay, tell you about Hulk Jesus.
You can figure it out. There's a picture of Jesus. He can color it in. He decided to go with green skin, and he referred to him as Hulk Jesus.
So this is another picture that I pulled out of his backpack from school. Okay, this was on a Monday after a Sunday. On a Monday, okay, so one day. He came in and I said, hey buddy, what's going on in this picture? How come you're on top of the clubhouse? And he's like, that's how I feel. I'm super happy. Look, you can see his feet are swinging. You see the lines? and he's got his little thumb up.
He was in the Diary of a Wimpy Kid phase with his drawing at the time.
What had happened the night before, we pray with our kids every night. It's just a nightly ritual that we have with them that helps them to feel like their sameness, especially for Dane. Kind of probably started out with it with our other kids, but then continued it because of Dane. And we still do that to this day. Our kids are all teenagers. We all pray together at night. Dane asked me a question. He said, "Mom, is heaven a box?" And I was like, "Well, I guess, sort of. It's 1,500 high and 1,500 wide." I don't know if they had talked about it at church or if a sibling had said something that they learned at church. And he said, this was on a Sunday night, and he said, "Well, I want to go there." And I said, "Well, I want you to go there too. Let me tell you how you can go there." So we went through this, you know, explained it. It's so hard to explain faith to an abstract child.
Really,
you guys get it?
Simple.
And because he asks me questions like, well, I don't even know, the questions I can't answer. And I'm like, So I try to keep it on his level and talk to him in ways that he would understand through pictures. And so we went through this whole explanation. And then I said, Jesus comes in your heart. And he was like, how does that happen? And it was like freaked out. Like, how does Jesus come into my heart?
He's so literal. He doesn't know.
And I said,
know.
Well, he just comes into your heart. And so he opens his mouth like a baby bird. And he goes, get in my heart. You know what? God recognizes that. It doesn't matter if you say, get in my heart, if you don't say the words at all, but it's in your mind. God recognized that. And so we went ahead and prayed with him, and we praised God and had this wow, you know, you accepted Jesus into your life and he lives with you, and how great is that? Well, you know, you never know if it sticks. Monday came. I cleaned out his backpack and he had this in there. He said, Mom, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I have Jesus in my heart. And I said, well, why are you crying? And he goes, that's not sad. I'm not sad. I'm happy.
And he's got his thumb up there.
He's got a little thumb up and a little tear in his eye. And it was such a gift from the Lord to know that everything that we put into him and the support that we get from our church and the support we get from our family means something. It's not just words or just actions. This is a child's soul. And he was able to show us the joy that was in his heart. And what an amazing gift to be able to show joy. All of our kids can show joy in one way or another.
Wow, that story sure pulled at my heartstrings. And hey, I'm so excited to be sitting here with Megan Wall, and she's going to share a little bit about her heart and passion for special needs ministry. So welcome, Megan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We are so looking forward to hearing more of your story. If you could share that, tell us how you got involved in special needs and what led you here.
Well, it's a very random story, but it's definitely a God story. I don't have any family with special needs. I don't have anyone. I keep looking back to my extended family, and there's no one in my extended family with special needs. But one summer when I was a sophomore in college at Texas Tech, I was trying to avoid the brutal heat in Lubbock. And so I was looking for somewhere to go in Colorado, and I enjoyed the camping ministry. I grew up in the camping ministry, and so I thought that would be a great place to look for a job. And I was hired by Colorado Easter Seals, but had no idea what Easter Seals meant. Come to find out, it is a large organization for children and adults with special needs. So they do all kinds of activities for them. And they happen to have a summer camp up in Colorado. So they hired me, and I showed up, and I had no idea what they were talking about. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. And back then, we didn't have Google access like we do today. And so I just went thinking, oh, Colorado will be great. And by the last day of staff training, they were talking about transferring someone with CP. And I thought, I have no idea what you're talking about. And so I walked up to the director and I said, I don't know what a transfer is or what CP is. And she got about as white as a ghost and said, that means moving someone with cerebral palsy to and from a chair or to and from a bed because they can't do it independently.
Okay.
And I thought, oh my word. And she said, do you know where you're at? And I said, no. And she said, this is a camp for children and adults with special needs. And I thought, oh, okay. And she said, are you sure you're willing, you know, to do this? Can you do this? And I said, well, I don't know if I can, but if you train me, I'll give it my best shot. So for the next 24 hours, they just poured into me. And then on Monday morning, I got two campers. One was an adult with CP who required total care. And the other was an adult who was a stroke patient who required total care. And for some reason, the Lord just gave me joy in caring for these ladies. And I loved it. And I thought, wow, I think this is what I'm meant to do. So I stayed the whole summer, came back the next summer, and then that's just kind of been part of my life ever since. Clearly, the Lord dropping me in a place.
Yeah, I would say so. That's incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm so curious, have you ever had contact with those two ladies since?
No, but I have their picture in my purse because people ask, and so I found it the other day. And so it's in my purse, and I keep looking at it and thinking, wow, these two women have totally changed my life because they were willing. I mean, they came thinking that they were getting an experienced counselor. They know that I had just learned like the day before how to do anything. But their vulnerability and their willingness to let me love them and take care of them completely changed, you know, where I ended up in life. So I'm forever grateful for them and for that director. That director should have sent me back to Texas. He kept me there. So
you're willing. You're willing to learn. That's awesome. So you're at this camp. God lights this passion and fire in your heart for these two women. What next?
Well, that's kind of where I was stuck. So I changed my degree to social work and decided that that was going to give me a way to work with children with special needs. But coming out of school, I really couldn't find anything. And so I was interning at a church and the church hired me on. And so I worked at a church for a few years. And then it wasn't until after I had my first child that I was attending Stonebriar Community Church here in Frisco. And they have a position for a special needs coordinator at the time. And I thought, wow, this is kind of combining my ministry experience and my social work and disability experience all into one. And so I applied for the job and then I was hired and I've been there now 11 years. So it was really neat to see God take that passion from Easter Seals, which is a secular organization, and then all of the work that I've done in ministry and combine those two into this world called special needs ministry, which 11 years ago was really unheard of. Stonebriar was one of the first to actually do ministry for children and adults with special needs.
I absolutely love that story so much. And I'm inspired because you've been in the same role at the same church for 11 years. And I have written down here that your ministry is made up of 100 students ranging from ages 3 to 65. Mm-hmm. That is incredible. What number did you start with?
I think there are about 25 families when I started. The community was a lot smaller. Frisco is one of the fastest growing cities in the country. And so our community has expanded tremendously in the past 11 years. But also our church's desire to minister to families with special needs has expanded. And so because the church has accepted them, it's made my ministry a whole lot easier.
So let's dig into that a little bit for our listeners who are sitting there thinking, well, we don't really have a special needs ministry. We're just getting started. What would you say to churches out there about why you should have a special needs ministry in your church?
Well, I think you just have to think about serving the community. Our ministry started with one child who was attending the church when we were meeting in a college, so we didn't have a permanent building. And that one child had special needs, and there was one volunteer who was willing to sit with that one child and just walk them through the activities of the day.
Hero.
Yeah. And it's so simple, yet we try to put so many things around it to make it an official, full-fledged ministry. So we started with one, and then we have since just kind of taken what God's given us. So that one person will tell another person about, you know, this church allows us to come, and they don't ask us to stay with our child, and you should come here. And so then another family comes, and then another family, and then the community just starts, you know, opening their arms saying, hey, we would love to have anything you can do for special needs here. And so then our church just steps in and fills that need. So it's really as simple as just meeting the needs of your congregation. Every church will have someone with special needs walk in their door eventually. And it's how you respond to that family that makes you a special needs ministry church or a church that's not welcoming to special needs families.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. It's not about a big program or about, you know, having all this stuff. It's just about the church being the church, which is what we all want to do.
Yeah. So I love that. And we talk a lot here about how to partner with parents. And as someone who hasn't necessarily grown up with a brother or sister with special needs, or I don't have any children with special needs, it might be hard for people to like relate to what do parents who are raising someone with special needs, what are some of the unique and challenging opportunities that are put in front of them that we could be aware of as church leaders?
Yeah, so I'm in your same position. I don't have any family with special needs, not raising any children with special needs. So I've really learned all of this just by visiting with our families that attend. I take them to lunch and have coffee and just ask them what we can do and what I need to understand better and able to minister or in order to minister to their family. So some of the things that I hear most frequently are just, you know, give us time. Don't expect us to be at everything. So I think so many times we have all these activity plans, and then if they don't come, we think that they're leaving our church, when in reality, they're just tired or they're busy. A lot of them are just scared to communicate with us because they have so many things going on. And they're scared if they tell us everything that we're going to freak out and push them back and say, wait, that's, you know, a little bit too much. I don't really want to dig that deep into your life. And so one thing I found is social media is great. Parents will post a lot of stuff on social media that they will never tell you face to face, especially standing in a church. And so I am friends or follow all of our families on social media, and that's how I learn a lot about what they're dealing with. Then it can be a matter of me reaching out and just saying, hey, I hear you, or I saw that post and I'm praying for you. Or my favorite story is one of our moms wrote something on social media, was just having a horrible day. And so we just took a box of cupcakes and dropped it off at her school where she works. She's a counselor. So we just dropped the cupcakes off at school and just said, hey, we hear you. We think autism sucks too, but we're with you, you know? And so it was just a way to say, we love you. We don't know what to do, because you aren't going to have all the answers. And I think that's the hard thing for pastors and church staff is we want the answers and we want to pray and we want this to be fixed. But our special needs families aren't like that.
So I would imagine not every church listening has a special needs ministry that's currently up and running or isn't even close to having a weekly program for students with special needs. How could they best serve families now without a separate program?
I think it goes back to communicating with the parents. If there's a child with special needs, talk to the parents and ask them what would be best for their child. They're not going to give you crazy answers, but they might say, hey, a pair of headphones during this loud worship time would really help them out. Well, that's an easy fix. Or they might say, you know, is there someone that could walk around with my child during this activity because the puppets really freak them out? Mm-hmm. Well, then you get a volunteer to walk with that child during that activity so that the puppets aren't a stumbling block for them. But you have to be willing to have that conversation and you have to be willing to be honest about what you can and can't do. If a family asks for a special room and you don't have the space or the capacity to staff that room, you can have that conversation and say, listen, we're not at the point where we can do that now, but I think that would look great in a 5-year plan. And then work towards that. If they know that you're willing to work towards something, most of the time they're willing to hang in there with you. But if they think that all you're trying to do is pacify them to keep them from making any more complaints or asking for anything else, then they're going to feel that and they're probably going to find a different church.
So I'm thinking in my head about some students where you can tell that there's something that you have to accommodate when they're in the room for a program, but their parents necessarily aren't forthcoming with their needs.
Yep.
How would you handle that?
So before I was seen as a pastoral leader of special needs, like before our church knew who I was, I could have the conversation. But if someone associates you with a special needs ministry, you should have someone else have that conversation. That way it's a little bit, it's not as forthcoming of we think your child has special needs, because that's not our place as a church to do that. But I would start the conversation with, you know, we saw Johnny doing this or this or this, whatever you're seeing, whatever you're experiencing, and say, does he do that in school, or is this a behavior that happens outside of church? And a lot of times if they have a diagnosis and they're willing to share with you, then they'll say, oh yeah, well, he's, you know, in a special education classroom at school, and so he doesn't have these environments that he typically deals with. Sometimes they won't say that. They'll just say, no, we really don't notice anything. And that's when you take it on as the church and say, well, we want Johnny to love coming to church, and we want this to be a place where he can't wait to get to. So what can we do to make this so exciting and so much better for him? Because right now, when he hides under the table, we feel like he doesn't like to be here. Can we do something that would make this better for him? And you put all the onus on yourself. And you try to do that, and then you have those conversations with the parents, like, we're trying to do this, but we're not able to do this part. You keep that conversation flowing, but at least they know that you're willing to do things for their child instead of asking them to do it. So instead of asking them to fix their child or to take their child to a doctor to get a diagnosis or to sit with their child in worship, which is what a lot of our tendencies are, is if you would just stay with him, he'd be fine. But in this scenario, we're telling them, we're going to do this, and we're going to work with you, and we're going to try to do everything on our end so that he wakes up on Sunday morning and can't wait to come.
I love that. I think there's three important things that you just said that stuck out to me. Correct me if I'm wrong. But the first one is have somebody else have the conversation if you're attached to the special needs ministry at your church, if you have one. I think that's so key. The second one you said is, does this happen at school? Ask that question. Because if a student has special needs, they're going to be in some kind of program or have an IEP or 504 or something at their school. And thirdly, if they're not acknowledging what you're seeing, asking the question, like, what do we need to create the best environment so they love coming here? I think those are really important. Did I capture that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, like, I have two children. I have a third grader and a sixth grader. And I know if my third grader is acting out in class and someone were to come to me and say, you know, he's really not enjoying this part of class, or he's doing this during class, what can we do to make it better? I would love that as a parent. So it's the same for our special needs parents. They want that same thing. And the more that you're talking to them and keeping that relationship going, the more they're going to be willing to share with you. So it might be a month or 2 months later that they'll come to you and say, yeah, we got a diagnosis, or he has a diagnosis, we were just scared to tell you. Because most of these families that you run into have been asked to leave church before. So they've shared a diagnosis, and a church with great intentions sometimes has said, our church isn't equipped to handle children with special needs, but the church down the street is. Or so they'll send them someplace else.
That breaks my heart.
Yeah. So sometimes they're scared to tell you because they know what's happened in the past.
With you having been at Stonebriar for 11 years, I would imagine that that has happened to you, where a student was recommended to leave another church and come to Stonebriar. How did you handle that transition?
So when a family is referred to us and from another church that doesn't have a ministry, we still treat that family the same way we would any other family. Our doors are open. We invite them in. We show them everything we have to offer. But we never say anything negative about the church that they came from. What we do is we will then go back the next week and contact that church and just say, hey, we had so-and-so come to our church, and we are so thankful that you referred them over to us. How can we help you develop anything to reach family with special needs so that you don't have to keep referring them to our church? I mean, we're a big church, and we have a pipe organ and choir robes and a very traditional service. And so we know that there are families who are not finding their preferred type of worship or environment at our church, just because we're not meant for everyone. We don't want the fact that we have a special needs ministry to be the only reason that people come to Stonebriar. We want them to feel comfortable, like this is their family church. So if there's a church that they feel more comfortable in that just doesn't have the ministry yet to meet their needs as a family, at Stonebriar, we want to invest in that church and help them develop a ministry it's not going to look the same as ours. It might not be as big as ours. It might not have the same budget as ours, but they can do something to help develop a ministry to then invest in families who come to them in the future.
Megan, that is a super endearing answer. And it makes me believe every word you're saying, and I can see your passion for special needs students because you're putting them before your numbers and your church size. I just think
we're not about hoarding people. My goal is that when my kids grow up and they have their own families, if they have a child with special needs, I want them to be able to choose a church based on the things that meet their entire family's need, not choose a church based on the church that can accommodate their child with special needs. It should be like children's ministry, where every church you walk into has a children's ministry. They all look different and there might be different things that you're looking for, but you're not going to ever find a church that says, oh, children, yeah, we don't really have children here, you know? And so it should be the same with special needs. And that's what we want to do, is to try to help other churches start anything. I mean, as small as it is, anything to reach out to these families.
Well, I think from all of us listening, we just thank you so much for blazing the trail on this ministry. And I would love for you to give us a little bit of a vision of some of the wins as a church. Okay, you have a special needs ministry in your church. You've been doing this for 11 years. You're building it. Some people have not started. They're just at the starting line. Some are somewhere in the middle. All right, but thinking long-term, what are some of the wins you've seen and experienced that we can aim for?
I think one of the biggest ones is when you have a family like the Parsons, who you just heard from, when their child can sit down and draw a picture and talk about his experience with Christ and his experience with giving his life over to Christ and finding faith, all through a picture that he drew because of all of the investment that he's had at church and through his family and through a church family who's willing to feed into his life. So when you have stories of children with special needs who are nonverbal, or students with special needs, adults with special needs who are nonverbal, who understand the saving power of Christ and can communicate that in whatever way possible, I think that's a win. If there is one student who comes to know Christ because of the work that we do, that's a win. And then to have multiple, and then to have a baptism service with all students with special needs, there's nothing better than that. I mean, we do our best to give parents a relief to allow them to have time in church and to have time in fellowship. But the real truth is that we are there as a church to share the gospel of Christ with every student who walks through our door. So while we're giving parents that relief, our true calling is to teach the gospel to these students. And when you see that come to fruition in their life and you hear them talk about stories that you've said for years and years and years, that's a win.
I love that. Thank you so much. If you could challenge every ministry leader listening at this moment, what is one thing they could do this week to encourage families who are raising someone with special needs?
I say, if you know that there's a family with special needs in your church, just to approach them and introduce yourself and ask how you may help them this week, whether it's prayer, whether it's something tangible, just ask how you can help. A lot of times they'll say, I'm good, but then you know that there's something that you can be praying for, and then do that. Pray for them or follow up with what they requested. If you don't think there's anyone with special needs in your church, one thing I heard a few weeks ago that was just real eye-opening for me, because I'm in a church where special needs, like if you have special needs, or you're telling people because we have a ministry and they want to direct you to the right place. But a speaker I heard a few weeks ago said, if you're in a church and you're not sure if there's anyone with special needs in your church, to start looking for those parents who come one week and the other parent comes the other week. So if you see mom one week and then next week you see dad, and then you see mom and then you see dad, that's probably a family with a special needs child, because one parent is probably staying home with that child. And so introduce yourself, invite that family over for dinner, and see if they have a child with special needs. And that's a perfect way to start a relationship.
That is so tangible. Thank you so much, Megan. Hey, I appreciate your time today, your wisdom. You have definitely inspired me, and I'm sure our listeners as well. And we're cheering you on. Thank you so much.
absolutely loved this interview, and I feel so challenged, just inspired by Megan's passion. And thank you again, Megan, for sharing with us and just starting the conversation that is so important that a lot of us have dropped the ball on. And I know for me, as I'm sitting here thinking about this interview, I'm feeling the weight of the families I did not engage with that were in my ministry who had special needs. And I'm thinking about how much more I could have done. I don't know what I would have done except engage more. And I loved how Megan challenged, like, at least follow the families who are in your ministry or in your church who have a child with special needs, because you'll know what they need and you'll hear their voice and you can engage with them there first before you ever meet them face to face. I also thought about the lady who led our special needs ministry in our church in Maryland. And I just feel like as a student ministry leader, maybe I didn't support her enough. And I wish I could go back and talk with her and encourage her and see how I could better support that ministry. So I think something that really stuck out to me about Megan as well is that she's been in this position for 11 years, has committed her life to it and built something from nothing when it wasn't the glamorous ministry that people were talking about. And there's something to be said about her commitment and her heart and who she is as a person. And I'm excited to see what other Megan Walls exist in churches around the world. Like, who is it in your church who's passionate about this that can help you get it started? Who is passionate about this, who can help light passion in you as the ministry leader to give more attention, more focus, and more love to those families? Thank you so much for joining us in this conversation today. I hope you feel as challenged as I do. This is why we have these conversations, is so that we can start them, and we're going to continue them on Orange Tour. And if you want to read the show notes, you can go to thinkorangepodcast.com. We have minute markers so you can jump into the conversation wherever you would like. We have some of the awesome gold nuggets that Megan, Tom, and Elisa dropped that you can tweet out. Tell your friends about the Think Orange podcast. Subscribe if you haven't already. We don't want you to miss an episode, because there's conversations like this, somebody else's story who can change your story. So join us next week on the Think Orange podcast. And remember, when you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.